The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have the opening of Cardinals camp today, and Bruce Cooper will be with us from 12 News. They are a partner of the Cardinals for preseason. We'll have Goody at the movies today. Always good to catch up with Bruce, because you can talk about longtime Valley sportscaster and everything that in between that Bruce has seen coming into this season with the Cardinals today in training camp. Anybody who thinks that they are going to contend for the NFC West, I am not hating on them. I am not sleeping on them. I'm just being a realist. That's not happening. Now, that doesn't mean that we could be sitting here in late November and a rash of injuries, suspensions, the unforeseen, the unseen, the this, the that. But really, this is a year, if we're being honest with one another, of intrigue around the Cardinals and what, in fact, they're getting in Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. I don't think anybody can sit here and say they're going to have the coach of the year. I think you could say they may have the rookie of the year. It's fine. You can go out on a limb. It's the number one overall pick. You should go out on a limb on that one. But I don't sit here today and look at this team and say this is a team that's going to beat the Rams or that's going to beat the Seahawks. They may get 1-1. They may. I mean, the 49ers are better. Are the Cardinals a better team today than they were when they opened training camp a year ago? And the answer would be no. Patrick Peterson is not going to do anything for 2 months. People tend to forget about that. Now, I think offensively, if there's a guy that I'm looking at in camp that's got to produce, not now, I don't care about August. Those of you that watch this know that this is my least favorite month of the year coming up, because we sit here and attach ourselves to this guy is going to be the shining star of camp, and this guy is going to be the breakout guy at camp, and then they get cut at the end. So it just gives people something to talk about for a month. Yeah, this guy, he's been so great. Yeah, he's doing it against guys that are going to dig ditches and pump gas. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not what they're paid to do. So I'll get that out of the way here. Opening comments, by the way, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And when we say protect what matters most, we mean with life insurance. Life insurance can be used for many different things in your portfolio, many different places that you're going in your life. If you've not sat down and took a good, hard, long look at everything you have laid out right now, you may be in your 20s and 30s and feeling like you're killing it. You may be in your 40s like, I should probably get serious about this. You might want to get serious a little bit sooner, like in your 30s and 20s. So when you are in your 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and beyond, everything is set up. And you can do that through life insurance at Sagicor Now. You simply log on to Sagicor Now. They just redid their website. Terrific materials, not just life insurance, but you can get a free quote right there online. No hassle, no waiting. At Sagicor Now, we appreciate Sagicor and their support. Bruce Cooper here in about 7 minutes. So yesterday was Pac-12 football media day. And this morning, I opened my inbox and had questions about or complaints about the idea of game times being put at 9 a.m., which here in Arizona, there's no way they would play a September football game, famous last words, no way they'd play a September or even early October football game, in my humble opinion, at 9 a.m. None. So I'm looking more towards the end of October and into November. If it's into November, it would be 10 a.m. kickoffs. The reason for this is very simple and very smart. When Arizona State is playing a late night game against Colorado and it's on ESPN or ESPNU and people are saying, or ESPN2, man, this is great. We're going to be on big ESPN this week. Yeah, you're going to be on in the fourth quarter when it's 1:30 in the morning in New York City and nobody's going to see you playing. And oh, by the way, there's been 100 or 200 football games played earlier in the day. You're lost. Versus, you're going to kick off at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. in all likelihood, 10 a.m. You're going to do so on Fox, not Fox Sports 1, which people, FS1, that many people can't get on cable outlets or DirecTV or satellite. It's there, but they don't know how to find FS1. Finding FS1 is hard. Finding the Pac-12 network is very difficult. Fans want convenience. You want the masses to see you? You play on Big Fox. Big Fox, 10 a.m. kick, or go out to L.A. and play the 9 a.m. kickoff against USC. Go do it. And the downside is what exactly? You're going to hear some nonsense about, yeah, my body clock is off, and boy, both teams look tired, blah, 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 blah. And that's about it. Well, what about my tailgates? Yeah, you can have brunch. You can have mimosas. It's even better. You imagine how Snooze is going to be across the street from Sun Devil Stadium? I love Snooze. You imagine how Snooze, I'm giving them a free plug here. Imagine how any breakfast spot would be around Sun Devil Stadium or in Tucson if the Wildcats or Sun Devils had a morning game. This is not going to be every week. It's not going to be every week. So when I get the complaints like, oh my gosh, the world's coming to an end because of a 9 a.m. kickoff. Guys, I don't know. I'd rather see football programs that don't get sentenced to El Paso every year. I'd rather see football programs that don't go to Vegas and lose to Mountain West schools. I'd rather see football programs that aren't being sent to second and third and fourth tier bowl games than start times. The fact of the matter is, the fan that goes to games is being pushed to the margins. You are not as important. They will say that you are important because they need to get people and revenue into the stadium. I understand that. But the check and the dollars versus what Big Fox is going to pay and all the promotion that goes along with it. It's one thing to be on at 8:15 kickoff on ESPN2. And it's U of A against Colorado. And like, I don't know how many people are watching that other than the diest of diehard fans or just to have some background noise on versus Fox during the week says this Saturday, it's a football doubleheader starting at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, Arizona State, Utah in the Pac-12 conference, followed by Oklahoma and Texas in the Big 12. A football doubleheader this Saturday on Fox. Man, I could write promos. I'm good at that. Not even scripted. So the credibility is 100 times higher. So that caught my eye yesterday. Clay Helton being replaced by Urban Meyer did not make front page stuff, but Clay Helton under the gun clearly was. Clay Helton, just so we're clear on this, I had to pull this up. So Clay Helton opens with Fresno State at home, a team that beat Arizona State. They then play Stanford at home. They go to BYU. Then they're home to Utah 6 days later on a Friday night. Then they play at Washington. Then they have Notre Dame. Hey, Eric, do you think Clay Helton's going to be on the hot seat by the time we get to the bye week? Actually, it's beyond their bye week. October 12th. Fresno State, Stanford, BYU, Utah, Washington, Notre Dame. Where are you at on that one?
Yeah, he's already on the hot seat, and I can't see anything changing considering that that is the schedule that USC has.
So you think he may be gone by then?
But I mean, I don't know if they're going to replace him with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is not going to step in early November to take over a program.
Yeah,
it's going to be the oops.
No, you're fine. Keep
okay,
talking.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. Keep
My
talking.
My camera's not connected.
That's fine. Keep talking.
Hold on. So I would just think that you're going to have a situation where it's like another interim coach. And then eventually I can see Urban Meyer taking that job because coaches want to coach. And he's always just going to be a guy that is just addicted to coaching. And when it's in your blood, it's in your blood. So.
I mean, if he loses to Fresno State right out of the gate, you look great.
That was operator on my part.
It's fine. If he loses to Fresno State right out of the gate, they're going to be after him. Nobody's going to be patient out there.
And I can see them losing to Fresno
too.
State. So.
I can too. I know we got to get to Bruce, but a new bowl game in L.A. was announced yesterday. Does this do anything for you, the Los Angeles Bowl?
At the new stadium?
Yeah.
Is it Pac-12?
Mountain West.
Pac-12 Mountain West?
Yeah.
Sure.
You'd go?
Well, I mean, it's...
You have a lot of time on your hands.
Would you rather go to L.A. or would you rather go to El Paso? I'd rather go to L.A.
Well, that's true. Now that you put it in those terms. Because I've seen this path to El Paso here with the local college football team just worn out through the years. Like,
but
it's a good thing.
I did think the Pac-12 got it right moving the championship game to Vegas.
Yes.
I mean, why wouldn't you?
Would you do 9 a.m. games? Is that a big deal to you?
I'm not really in favor of a 9 a.m. game.
Come on.
The players will hate it.
I know.
They will hate it.
I know. So what? They're on scholarship. They get food. They get dorm.
I just don't think that no one.
They're not going to draw any more fans during the day than they are at night. They're going. ASU and U of A always draw around 45 to 50. It doesn't matter unless it's the U of A game or if either team is relevant. And both teams usually are not. They're just meandering around.
I don't think anyone would want to see a big game in the Pac-12 played at 9 a.m. Because that does, it's just not good. It's not good for the conference. It's not.
What
good
do you mean it's not
players.
Good for the conference? It can be on Fox, rather Pac-12 Network. You like Pac-12 After Dark. You're one of the guys that likes Washington, Arizona State at 7:30 kick.
I do.
Do you like it when you're standing on the sidelines with a camera on your shoulder at 11 p.m. They're still playing?
It's fine.
Is
I mean,
it?
It's just part of. I love college football. So they could play at 4 a.m. and I wouldn't care. But,
well, there you go then. They'll
but
play at 9.
But I just think for the. The better of the game, Pac-12 game should not be at 9 in the morning. They just, I understand why. I get it. Because it's
business.
Noon Eastern and it's on a bigger network. I understand that.
Huge network.
But I don't think the brand is going to be any better playing games at 9 in the morning.
And
they have an identity issue. The Pac-12
yes.
has an identity
yes.
issue. They want to play good football. You're not going to get good football on the West Coast at 9 in the morning on Saturday. You're
you don't
just
know
not
that.
Going to.
You haven't tried it. You don't know that.
I just can't.
Yesterday, the star wide receiver for Colorado is at Pac-12 Media
yep.
Day. Top 10 pick in the NFL draft,
yep.
and there's one guy talking to him.
And he
that's
and
awful.
It was someone
that's an
that,
awful
and it was
visual.
Someone, and it was a handler. It wasn't even a media member. It was a handler. It was someone that was there to assist with media questions.
It's an awful visual for that conference. Nobody can deny it. I mean, they all want to sugarcoat it and say, well, this way it's always been done. Change. Move the ASU U of A game to earlier in the year. Get away from being lost on Thanksgiving weekend. I'm going to run some of this by Bruce Cooper next, plus the Cardinals opening camp. I'm Brad Sismat. Now we turn our attention to the opening of training camp and all things around the Arizona sports scene with Channel 12 sports director, good friend Bruce Cooper. He joins us. Are you on your way out to the Cardinals right now?
You got me?
Bruce, it's Brad.
Yeah.
How are you, Bruce?
Good. Hey, I'm okay. Hey, sorry about the delay. I'm actually walking through security, and I guess my little metalized knee wouldn't allow me to get through properly, but I'm good.
You got stopped, huh?
I got stopped.
Does that happen to you much, Bruce, through the years? You get stopped by security? You've been doing this a dang long time. Security ever hassle you?
Not really. Only, like I said, when I try to go through metal detectors, I get really any issues. But outside of that, I'm pretty good.
All right. So you're walking into the stadium to see a football team that is going to win how many games this year, in your opinion?
Well, Brad, I'm on record of saying the Cardinals will win 10 to 12 games. Yeah.
What? Send them back to the medical detector. What? I know you're carrying the games on Channel 12, but you are 10 to 12?
Hey, look,
what?
Look, that has nothing to do with all of my colleagues within the station there. They ask, what am I smoking? I hear all this stuff. You know, they have the Cardinals winning, you know, maybe 5 games, 6 games. But here, let me tell you this, Brett.
Okay.
I am so enamored with Kyler Murray.
Okay.
I think this kid is such a true, true difference maker, a great playmaker. I think he's going to have a fabulous season. I think his kid's going to have Cardinal fans excited, have them talking playoffs when they didn't think that was even going to be possible this year. That's how much I'm impressed with Kyler Murray. Now, I do want to mention this. On draft day, even leading up to the draft, I couldn't believe the number of my colleagues in the media who were on the Quinn Williams or Joey Bosa bandwagon, or Nick Bosa, excuse me, bandwagon. They were perfectly content with coming back with Josh Rosen as the quarterback. And I just and this is what really blew me away.
Okay.
I mean, I asked him, did you guys watch the same Cardinal games that I did? I mean, I really had to ask this question. I mean, the Cardinals were dead last in every major offensive statistical category, including scoring. And you think bringing back Josh Rosen's the answer? No, this dynamic kid. And I want to tell you, if you go back and you flash back to the rookie year of Deshaun Watson, The kid lit it up before he tore his ACL. And granted, Patrick Mahomes had to sit basically his rookie season behind Alex Smith, but last year was truly a rookie season for him, even though it was his sophomore year in the league. The kid lit it up. I'm expecting that same type of dynamics from Kyler Murray. So when people ask me, what am I smoking? When people laugh at me and try to clear their throat, did I hear you correctly? Yes, you did. I think this kid is that dynamic, and I'm gonna throw something that may blow you away even more.
Yeah,
I think that this kid will combine for over 40 touchdowns, both running and passing. That's the type of dynamics I think this kid can bring.
All right, I like the limb.
I didn't stutter.
No, and I like the limb that you're on. It's actually a branch, but it's you're out there. It's fine. It's fine. I mean, we're rolling tape on this. And look, we've taken shots. I've taken shots on things where, you know, when you're out there on your own island, which I don't know, is there anybody else on the same island as you around town that you've heard or read that believes the same as you do? Or are you this one?
No, this is Coop's Island, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. It's call it Coop's Island, Brad, because let me tell you something. I'm not one of those guys that just falls in line with the mainstream is saying. What I truly see and believe. I saw this kid at Oklahoma. I was absolutely blown away. I don't know the kid. I've only met him once and talked to him once in my life, and that was when him and Victor Studerstrom were throwing out the first pitch at the Diamondbacks game last month. So I don't have any ties to this young man or anything like this. I don't know him. But what I am blown away by is his sheer skill and talent base. I mean, the fact that he was the a top 10 draft pick in Major League Baseball, ninth overall to the A's. The fact that he was the first overall pick in Major League Baseball. No other athlete in American sports history has ever been drafted in the first round of two of our major sports. Yet this kid was. It already speaks to the talent level that I'm talking about that this kid possesses.
Okay. So what I'm hoping is the good people at 12 Sports build you a nice custom graphic, a nice big flashy opening that says Coop's Island. And it's like a cardinal helmet on a palm tree with you standing on the island and you're in a Speedo. I think that would be a really cool bit for the whole season. Here is Coop's Island.
Brad, you had me going good until you dropped the Speedo. Can I just have a
pina colada,
maybe? I'm okay with
that. Yeah, pina colada. It's fine. A little tank top action, little gun show with your arms. Coop's Island. I may steal that. Bruce Cooper with us over at 12 Sports. Okay, so while you love Kyler Murray, in my humble opinion, if David Johnson does not perform well this year, Kyler Murray is going to get run over. So with the numbers that you are throwing out, they've got to be able to run the football somewhat, which means their offensive line has to come through. I don't know defensively what's going to happen without Patrick Peterson out there. We can all say Byron Murphy is going to be this or that. We all like Byron because he's been here. We can all say Christian Kirk's going to be this or that opposite Larry because we like Christian. But under what you're saying with 10 to 12 wins, it means that every bad move that the Cardinals have made in the last couple of years, every missed pick that they've missed on the last few years, they're all going to turn around this year, Bruce, I would think. So you're expecting a complete turnaround by the entire organization, not just Kyler Murray.
Brad, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Offensively, I'm expecting a complete 180.
Okay.
Like, let me tell you something. Murray's presence will make that offensive line better. All of a sudden, when he drops back to pass, and not only will he get the ball out quickly, but when the pass rush comes, this kid has an innate ability to escape that, extend the play, and throw accurately on the run. And then when he's not going to throw it, he's going to pull it down and run it. I mean, he's just a dynamic runner. So he's going to make the offensive line better. And you mentioned David Johnson. I want you to picture this for me, Brad.
Okay.
I want you to picture this offensive line and the wide receivers out. And then in the backfield, all you have is Kyler Murray and David Johnson. Now, if you reflect back to last year, if it was Josh Rosen and David Johnson, Josh Rosen puts the ball in the belly of David Johnson, the ends are crashing. They're limiting David Johnson's running lanes because they know that he's just coming straight ahead and he try to bounce it outside. They have collapsed that interior of that line. Now with Kyler Murray there, those ends don't dare crash because of the fear that Murray will pull the ball out of his belly and turn the corner. A la Lamar Jackson, what we saw in Baltimore last year. It's the reason why Joe Flacco got sat on the bench, because Lamar Jackson brought a dynamic running the ball that it couldn't be replicated. And the Ravens, what, 7 of 8 games?
Yep.
Look, it's that type of dynamic that will open up running lanes for David Johnson. But here's the difference. Kyler Murray is so much more of an accomplished passer than Lamar Jackson is, but he still has that running dynamic that's going to allow and the defense to respect it and stay at home. And thereby, David Johnson's a better running back already.
All right.
Just by changing quarterbacks. Nothing more than just by changing quarterbacks.
All right. So Bruce is on Bruce's Island, 10 to 12 wins. We have that. who has more wins, Arizona State or the Cardinals?
Well, the fact that the Cardinals are going to play more regular season games than the ASU, I'm going to have to say the Arizona Cardinals.
Okay. Who is close to win? Are they the Sun Devils close in wins to the Cardinals this year?
Well, let's see. They won 7 a year ago, but they had experience at the quarterback position and a dynamic receiver. Those elements are gone. Look. I don't know anything about Jaden Daniels other than what I've seen on tape.
Yep.
And Ethan Long, Joey Yellen, three freshmen coming in. Dylan Sterling Cole, the only veteran there, has only played seen action in a couple games. The quarterback's position is so vital to the success of any team that. I just think there's too much of an unknown there for me to really kind of say that ASU would have a better win total than a year ago. I think that their defense will be greatly improved, and I do think that they still have talent at that wide receiver position despite the loss of N'Keal Harry, but. With the biggest unknown being the quarterback position, I think we're just going to have to hide and watch. And one of the things that we've seen with Herm Edwards, he's not afraid to play those freshmen. So,
yeah.
Look, Jaden Daniels is very much ballyhooed. We'll see. We'll see.
Where are you at on 9 a.m. kickoff games within the Pac-12? Larry Scott brought this up yesterday.
Don't like it one single bit. Not one single bit. You know, and I think it would definitely impact the crowd as well. I mean, look, student body, you know, they love to go out and party on Friday nights. You know, if you're going to make a 9 a.m. wake-up call, I don't think that student section is going to be as populous and raucous as we would see it, as we've known it to be. Look, if you want to make the kickoffs noon, 1 o'clock, because that's what they are, back on the East Coast, when we wake up and we can turn on college football at 9 a.m. Arizona time, it's noon back east. It's noon. So to ask these guys to wake up that early and play, and ask your fan base to come out that early and support them when a work week, people are looking to wind down and let their hair down and party a little on Friday night, I don't like it one bit. I think it's a huge mistake by Larry Scott in the Pac-12 if it gets to that point.
But here's the thing on this. The Pac-12, in my opinion, has already made a really bad decision in playing some of their conference games on Friday nights. I think you and I are on the same page on this one. Friday nights are meant for high school. Saturdays, it's not like it's going to be every week. And if Big Fox is offering up a window and you have to move one of your games, and I think in Arizona State's and the U of A's case, it would be in November because of the heat issue. So the game would actually kick off at 10. Is it ideal? No. But you're being given a TV opportunity that there's no shot versus being on at 7:30 at night on ESPN at the end of the day. It's 1 o'clock in the morning when the fourth quarter starts. Nobody's seeing this. Yeah, the fans that are in the stadium are the ones that are paying the price. Fans in stadiums, Bruce, are being marginalized for TV. That's what's happening. And I look at it and say, I think that's actually pretty forward thinking on the conference's part, because you got to do something. This conference is at the bottom of the Power Five. They're almost becoming part of the Group of Five. They're just not that good. And I don't see any easy answers on this.
Well, Brad, when I look around and I look at the Big 12, who has a time zone, you know, not that far off from the West Coast, the Pac-12 here.
Yep.
You know, there's really only a one, maybe two teams now with Texas back in the mix that are even relevant. It's Oklahoma and no one else. So I will give credit to what Texas is doing here lately, and now they may be relevant. But I think you can say when you talk about the Power Five and the SEC, it's just all about Alabama. Alabama dominates so much that's all people think, that they're the most dominant conference around. Yet you have teams like Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas in there. But yet they're under the umbrella of the SEC, so you think they're all good. But look, Georgia's on the come up. But I still, if you're only going to talk about one game that a Pac-12 school has to give up for that time slot, okay, I'm okay. I can buy that. But not when you're talking about a five to six home game schedule
no.
All your home games are at that, that's not going to happen. I'm not in favor of that at all.
Okay, so one last thing that I've been running by the flagpole. There's two things. One is the Pac-12, Arizona and Arizona State should strongly consider looking at going to the Big 12 when the TV contracts change in the next couple of years. They really should. The second one is the U of A ASU game should get away from pretending they're all mighty and all that on Thanksgiving weekend when they're playing opposite of Auburn, Alabama, and nobody's watching them, and play the game earlier in the season. Utah BYU is playing earlier in the season. Texas Oklahoma plays earlier in the season. These are great rivalries. I know the Territorial Cup's been around over 100 years. I know it's always played on Thanksgiving weekend, but TV rules, and you got to find ways for people to watch your game rather than, well, this is the way it's always been done, and you're getting nowhere fast except 6 wins and a trip to El Paso every year.
Well, see, Brad, my thoughts on that is that it's up to Arizona State and Arizona to become relevant. If they both go into the season undefeated, if they establish themselves as powers on the come up, then the eyes and attention will be there. But if they're going to languish in mediocrity, you know, you're just feeding into this. Well, why don't we try to look to make change? No, why doesn't the programs look to make change? I like what Ray Anderson has done. I know it.
I do too.
It brought a lot of eyes. Yeah. He's raising the level and the bar.
Yes.
And you have to reach that bar. You shouldn't have to make concessions because of mediocrity. Man, step up, man up, move your program forward. And so that's my answer to that.
All right, I'll let you go off that. 10 wins on an island, Coop. Coop's Island. I will refer to that often. Thanks, Bruce.
Hey, I appreciate it, Brad.
See you. It's Bruce Cooper. I haven't gagged on the air. I don't mean that in a negative sense. I haven't, like, lost my breath on the air in a long, long time till that moment. Did you know, Eric, that he had that opinion in him about the Cardinals and 10 wins?
No. If he's right, he's going to have bragging rights over every media member,
everything.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 and 10 to 12. 10 to 12. Wow, that would be, 8-8 for me would be a great season for the Cardinals.
Coop's Island. I have to refer to that through the year. Goody is around the corner, but we have a little segment next with something really cool on the baseball front. We'll talk some Diamondbacks, too. Surfing around, as I tend to do, and saw something that was pretty funny, out of left field, using the baseball term. And that is Gerardo Parra. Gerardo Parra was a very good player for the Diamondbacks, in my opinion. He wasn't a superstar, but he was a very good player. Defensively, he was great. He had a nice personality about him. So now Gerardo Parra has bounced around. He was with Milwaukee. I think he was, maybe it's just Milwaukee, but now he's with the Washington Nationals. So you guys know about the whole deal with walk-up songs, right? Walk-up songs kind of set the tone. When a player steps up to the plate, he has to have his walk-up song, which establishes who he is. People like to hear the walk-up songs, like to be questioned the walk-up songs. Here is Gerardo Parra and his walk-up song, This Was Yesterday. And having kids, I've seen the shark, shark, shark thing. That's awesome. Like, to have a stadium jump in and have some fun with it during the course of 162 games, I very much like that. For the Diamondbacks today, they're off. They're down in Florida. Could be Zach Greinke's final start tomorrow in Miami. I don't know if they're going to get rid of him or not. I'm only going off of what I hear in the agent world and some people who I really believe in terms of plugged in baseball circles. The Diamondbacks are willing, reportedly, to eat about $10 million a year of Zach Greinke's deal, which would mean they'd be on the hook for about $60 million, or $30 million. There's $60 million left on the deal, so $30 million, my mistake. If they're able to find somebody to take that contract off of their hands, obviously the Diamondbacks should try to get rid of Robbie Ray as well, get rid of both of them, bottom out, start over. There's nothing wrong with that. I respect the fact that this franchise has given us a competitive product for half of the season and even beyond that the last couple of years. If you think back to it, last few years, it usually peters out around 4th of July when they end up in Los Angeles and the Dodgers hit walk-offs or do something against them. Well, the Dodgers are much better now. The Diamondbacks are not going to catch them in the current way that they are built. And in the wild card, they're, I think, 2.5, 2 back. And every day we play this game, 1 step forward, 2 steps back. When we get back together on Monday, it'll be trade deadline day. Pedro Gomez will be with us on that day. I would expect that something would be of happened by then. Because the idea of them walking to a podium and saying, we like the current setup of our team, says to me that, well, it means you believe you have enough pitching to come along to put alongside of Greinke and Robbie Ray. And I don't think they do. Taylor Clark has hung in there by a thread. Merrill Kelly was batting practice the other day. So I don't see where there's a strong number three, a strong number four. You know, Pat Corbin left, got the big money. They haven't been able to replace him. Is there anybody coming up through the system? I don't see it. The parts of Adam Jones and Jerod Dyson and Avila and Greg Holland, even though yesterday was interesting watching Torrey go out and Holland not being all happy and getting a little red ass about being pulled from the game. There's some pieces there that I would think by the time we get back together on Monday that are going to be changed out. All right, Goody at the Movies and Other Stuff is next. Bill actually, in all seriousness, had a terrific achievement happen in his life this week, and we will talk about that on the other side. Stay with us. So today's a big day to have Bill on Goody at the Movies through the years, because look at this. We pulled this off. Bill pulled it off. He got his master's. We have the degree. We have the diploma up on the screen right now. This is awesome of you. How many years ago did you do this?
Oh, I just got it. It took years.
It literally take years?
Yeah, it took years. I mean, it's supposed to take some amount of years to begin with. It took me a few more years than most people. I did it, and then I got, you know, all kinds of stuff happened. People got sick and died, and I actually got valley fever somewhere in the middle of trying to get it. That kind of threw me off for a little bit.
So you have this piece of paper that's big.
Yes.
What are you going to do with it? What are you doing with this?
I don't know. When I graduated from college, I had a letter from the school that said, until you pay your unpaid parking tickets, we're not sending you a diploma. and then the next day, my diploma arrived. So I never paid them. But my mom framed it, and I actually don't know where it is. but maybe my wife will frame this one. I don't know.
That is great.
But, it's one of the things where I've managed to get another degree that is even less marketable than my English degree from college. So,
when are you going for your doctorate there, Bill?
it'd be fun. I've always thought it'd be fun to have the nickname Doc, you know?
Dr. Goody.
Yeah.
I like that. Mueller and everything yesterday, what was yesterday like for you?
Well, it was weird because yesterday for me was in North Carolina. It was 58 degrees. I was in my in-law's home on top of a mountain looking at trees and stuff. And then I would watch TV for a little while and then I'd look at trees a little bit. It was a really kind of a nice way to watch that kind of craziness because you could just open the windows and the doors and, you know, like relax. But it was, You know, it was a strange day, obviously.
Yeah.
We living in, you and I have discussed many times that we're living in strange times. I think there's been a lot of talk that, you know, people are complaining, oh, you know, he wasn't entertaining enough. And then other people are saying, well, you know, he doesn't need to be entertaining. He needs to just tell the truth. And I think that, and then I'm sitting there like looking at the story I wrote and thinking, am I writing about the entertainment aspect? And I don't think that I am. However, I do think that it's fair game to say how it comes off on TV, because TV is the way 99% of the people who see this stuff obviously see it. You know, not a lot of people are reading newspapers anymore and that kind of thing. And I think that he doesn't have to be entertaining. And I actually, that's not what I wrote about when I wrote about it. I wrote about how these things, these hearings have all become the same, no matter what the subject is, no matter who the witness is.
Mm-hmm.
It's both sides pursuing their own agenda. One side has nothing to do with the other. So it makes your head spin. It's like, what is the point of this? Why are we having this if the Republicans are just going to yell at the guy and the Democrats are just going to like sort of aimlessly ask questions that don't seem to lead anywhere? All it does is make everybody mad and nothing comes of it.
Yeah. Yesterday I was trying to listen to it. And I felt the same as you. It's okay. When they say that this Republican is going to ask questions, okay, he's going to protect him. And then when the Democrat asks questions, okay, he's going to go after him. And the way that he handled it many times, I was left like, wow, he really doesn't feel like he's that plugged in. And is he acting? Is he really not that engaged in the process? Is he really that unaware of how things went down? It's hard for me to follow him yesterday, to be honest with you.
Well, he kind of warmed up a bit as it went on. I do think that he seems to have a legitimate hearing problem, or he was having a problem hearing what they were saying, and they seem to have fixed that, the break in the first session. He didn't have to say, you know, repeat the question so many times. But I think that what he was doing was, as he said many times, he said, this report speaks for itself. If you want to know what I think, if you want to know the conclusions I drew, they're in the report.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not make for gripping TV. One of the things I wish that I'd thought of that I saw some other people write was that this was one of those things where the book is better than the movie.
If
if you want the truth, it's in the report. You just got to read it. And you're not going to have some guy do a song and dance act and try to entertain you and scream at you and holler. And, you know, I mean, and that's just I walked outside. At the same time that I was doing all this stuff, I had to pack up my kids and all this stuff because I had to drive to the airport as soon as I wrote this story. And I had to leave the room for a little bit to, like, get clothes out of the dryer or something. And then I walked back in. So I had missed, like, the transition to the next congressman. And whoever it was just screaming. And I thought, well, this has got to be a Republican. And it was. And I don't mean that. It's not necessarily meant as a partisan statement. It's just that's sort of the way the thing went.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They would berate him for a while, and they would be, I don't know.
What happens from here, in your view, on this?
Nothing. I mean,
That's how I am, and nothing. Nothing's going to happen.
But both sides will claim victory, and it won't mean anything. Now, there are a couple things that could happen. I mean, they could, there's not going to be an impeachment or anything like that.
Right.
But there will be some more investigations, and there will be people who are tried and convicted. You know, and all these people that are in trouble are still in trouble. You know, that for messing with the elections. And I think that, as many people have written, the most important thing about yesterday was what happened afterwards, which was the Republicans will not even take a vote on trying to protect the 2020 election from foreign interference.
Mm-hmm.
And after, you know, the guy who knows more about this than just about anybody said, this is still happening while we're sitting here talking.
I don't know if you've... Go ahead, finish.
Oh, I just made you scratch your head a little bit. I mean, it makes you think maybe you welcome a little of that info. I don't know.
Before I get you out of here, Bill, have you been following the ESPN versus Dan Lebatard story in the last week? Okay, so he is supposed to meet with the management of ESPN next week at some point. do we have a responsibility on the sports end of things? I have people that tell me they really enjoy hearing you and I do political stuff. I have other people that say, I can't stand it. I hate it. I don't believe you guys could talk about this, this, and this. So it tells me, okay, so you sat through the whole segment. So you actually did enjoy it, right? Is there a space in sports, in politics? I do believe they mix, but there is a balance. Do you think that you feel the same way as I do?
I absolutely do. And I would commend to you something that Roger Ebert once wrote when somebody was up. He wrote this really nice thing about how, you know, burning the flag should not be protected by the Constitution. It's actually an exercise of free speech. You may disagree with it, but you still should still be able to do it. And all these people just killed him over it. His thing was, I will not stick to my knitting. I will do, you know, what I think I need to do. I think that it's part of our life, and it's increasingly a part of all of our lives. I mean, was the U.S. women's soccer team not political? You could not talk about that team without talking about politics. And I mean, I'm good for Lebertard. I'm on his side. And I think if they were going to do something bad to him, they would have done it already. I mean, they would have suspended him. They might just come out and, you know, make some, I don't know what they'll do. But ESPN's kind of a weird place. But I think they're absolutely, I mean, I think that's one of the things that people like about LeBron. That's why LeBron is such an important figure in sports and in popular culture right now. He speaks his mind on these things. He's not silent. Steve Kerr speaks his mind. You may not agree with him, but at least he is a thinking person who can think beyond X's and O's. Although he can't seem to get past Anthony Davis.
Right. But I think in the case of Lebatard, it's also, there's other media outlets out there that would love to have him. So if it's like Jemele Hill, where ESPN punched her ticket, I mean, the first time they slapped her on the wrist, second time I think it was a two-week suspension, and then she was gone. If the same thing happens here, he's going to be fine and land on his feet. I don't believe that you can just stick to and pretend that this stuff isn't happening around you, but I also don't think you can hammer people over the head. Sports is a candy store. It is a place for an escape. It's the balancing act of, if every day all you're going to do is hammer this, I can go 100 different places. I do have to mix in a little bit of the sports stuff.
Of course. I remember I once hosted your show when you were on vacation or something, and one of my guests was my sometime pal Jimmy Kimmel. And we talked for a long time about something or other. I can't remember what it was. And even as a guest, he said, hey, you know, this is a sports show. Don't you think you ought to come back to sports at some point here? maybe that would be good. Of course it is. But there can be a mix. And as you say, I mean, you can't pretend it's not going on and it's not affecting everything, including sports. So, I mean, you know, get your head out of the sand. Come on.
He has his master's. He's going to go get his doctorate next. He's going to have buildings named after him. It's good stuff. Congratulations on that. Thanks for the visit.
Yeah. They only name buildings after you if you give a lot more money than I did.
See you later. There's Bill. Goody at the movies and other stuff. Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. Devin has up on the site, Devin is the sportive speed guy. That's his passion. It doesn't mean other passions, but he has some content up on the website that you should check out with NASCAR and racing and sportive speed in general in our great state. He put up today. And of course, Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of Everything or Nothing, depending on the day. This show repeats for the next 24 hours. The spots, the commercials that you see in the show, we are self-funded. Okay. We don't do this without sponsors saying we believe in what you are doing. So we appreciate those people that do support us. And we encourage you to support them as well. Have a great day.